This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 412 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And on the other end of the Skype call, freshly back from Fiji, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you? Refreshed?
I'm retiring.
Retiring from what?
Podcast.
Oh, okay.
I thought I'd wait to get on air to tell you.
Okay. Why are you retiring?
Well, I saw something a bit disturbing.
This is the Rob Coates comment.
I'm feeling a bit undervalued. And you know the people have spoken. Yeah, 1/7 of our listeners have voted.
1/7. Yeah.
So go on, read it out. Go on.
So I got an email from Rob Coates through the week. Oh, sorry, no, it wasn't. It was a comment on the show notes on the blog. It said, just listened to episode 411. Wow, best episode ever.
If hey, I was feeling no capitals on the wow, so it wasn't wow. It was wow.
Oh, it was, mate. It was implied. It was implied. It was implied.
Wow.
If I was feeling nitpicky, I'd say it was a tad too long. But hey, at least there weren't too many.
Wow. Best episode ever. That's why you read it, isn't it?
Maybe it is. But at least there weren't too many speakers. Well, almost.
How long did it go for? If you're saying 15 minutes?
12 minutes, yeah.
Was it really?
Which is probably about the average amount of content you get from me in each episode.
That's probably about the average amount of quality content you get out of 400 episodes.
Oh, dear. Keep up the good
work.
So
anyway, yes, I'm back from 3G. Fresh may not quite be the word I'd use, but okay. I'm back.
Why are you not refreshed?
Well, I did a little accident.
Oh?
Where I fell and broke a couple of ribs and smashed my noggin and bashed up my shins a bit.
Yikes. How'd you manage that?
Well, I fell off a boat.
You fell off a boat?
Onto a pier.
Was the water frozen?
No.
So why did you break ribs?
Because I landed on a pier.
Oh, right.
A wooden pier.
Right.
Full of the water.
Well, tip for next time, fall out the other side of the boat. Because
the boat was coming in to dock, right? And the guy, there was only one guy on board running it, and he goes, can you get the rope? It's a sure thing. I can dock this bugger. Yeah. So I've gone up the front of the boat as we're moving in towards the pier. We're still 5 feet away.
Yeah.
And I realise I'm on the wrong side of the big ladder thing that people get on and off to where the rope is.
Right.
So rather than going around the back of the ladder, I decided I'd go around the front.
Right.
The outside bit. And as I take the step onto the outside, I go to grab said ladder, and it's not attached to anything. It just falls.
Whoops.
And it falls backwards with me falling. Somehow falling backwards, I don't know how, I managed to spin in the midair and land smashing my chest.
Gracefully like a cat.
Rock falling. a 250-pound boulder falling from 5-6 feet up.
So not gracefully like a cat.
Smashed incredibly hard into the thing. By sheer good fortune, the way I fell with one arm raised, and that hit the ground, hit the pier,
right.
And my head hit that.
Right.
So my cheekbone hit my hand so hard that it bruised my cheekbone from my, it's like being punched.
Wow.
And my head sort of rocked forward over my hand and hit the ground anyway and cut my head open a massive, massive lump.
Wow.
So if I hadn't had my hand there to cushion a lot of the impact, it would have been face.
You'd have broken the pier.
I would have been a seriously bad, I reckon it would have been a helicopter hospital trip.
Really?
It was a serious fall. Yes.
Yikes.
High impact to land flush on your chest and break three ribs.
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
Oh, it does. A little testy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and of course, it happened in 0.3 of a second. I'm just laying there dazed and, of course, then the kids are panicking and the wife's panicking and
dazed
the guy who's
confused
running the
and
boat,
singing
the
Led Zeppelin.
The guy's running the boat goes, don't worry, we'll just get off the back.
It's okay, Glyn, we didn't really need that exit.
He just pulls the boat in sideways, puts the ladder at the back, and he walks off the back. I'm going, well, good on you. Could have done that earlier. As I'm laying there dazed, going, you're not really doing that, are you? You could at least make me still tie the damn thing up. And yeah, so that fortunately that was on my third last day,
right?
So, second last full day there.
Yeah.
So and fortunately the way the ribs broke, it didn't pierce anything, so flying was still possible.
Yeah, right.
Because if you can't fly, then you're in deep trouble as well.
Yeah,
that could take a while. So yeah, that was not a lot of fun.
Jeez.
Sort of say. But the rest of the trip was fabulous. We had a ball. I had no interest whatsoever in Fiji, frankly.
You know, that was the Tamron Karma gods getting you back. That's what that was.
Well, I dropped 17 to 35 twice whilst I was away.
Twice. I do believe that Facebook only heard about one incident where you bounced it down the stairs of the bus.
I'd seen these fire spinners spinning fire, funnily enough, that's what fire spinners do.
Right.
And I wanted my daughters to see it. And they were in the room, and I was coming back from a little walk and photo shoot, and these guys were probably, I don't know, 500 metres from there.
Yep.
So I ran to the room, got the kids, and I'm running back across to the fire spinners, and I get there, and they're watching. It's really cool. I reach down to my bag to take the 72s in off to put on the 17 to 35, and it's not in the bag anymore.
Oh, no.
And about, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes later, my wife walks up holding it in her hand. Oh. It'll come out somewhere from the run across.
Oh, no.
So it took two fairly decent whacks and not a single mark to it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's working perfectly fine, which for a cheap lens is quite amazing.
Yeah.
And a funny little addendum, I was out at Tamron Australia's headquarters today and having a little chat, and I was telling the story, and they know about the carnage my gear gets, so they weren't. But then they came up with this idea. There's a big annual general meeting of Canberra House Group next month, in November, I should say.
Right.
Which is, and they're the largest chain of stores in Australia.
Yep.
And one of the things they do on their annual general meeting on their big gala ball night is have a charity auction.
Right.
And what they do is have a charity auction with one of my prints taken with my 15 to 30.
Yeah.
And it includes my 15 to 30 that took the photo.
Right.
All bashed up. Living the life, you know?
And still working perfectly. Yeah,
and still working, which is fortunate because they've got a new 15 to 30 announced this week, which we'll talk about later. So I'll get the new one of those, and they're going to have what's left of my old one. And which has had significant repairs done to it.
Yeah, right.
And so I thought it was kind of cool to they're going to mount the lens in the frame, kind of thing, and auction of that, which is pretty cool. A fun sort of thing.
They should mount it in cotton wool.
So as I said, I'd never in my life ever wanted to go to Fiji. Held no interest in you whatsoever.
But did you enjoy it?
But the reason we went with the deal was really good. We were going with a couple other families from school.
Yep.
The kids were going for their friends. The deal was too hard to pass up. So I said, well, I'll go, but don't make me enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't try and force me to have a good time. And within the first day.
Yep.
I hated it. No, the people, the Fijian people had won me over.
Aren't they just beautiful people?
Of all the places I've travelled,
yeah,
I've never met, especially people
They're
in
so
amazing,
happy.
Yeah, these people have fed bogan knucklehead tourists bombarding them in vast numbers for at least the last 30 years.
Yep.
Yeah, 30 to 40 years.
Yep.
And they are still loving and generous and kind and happy and amazing. Yep. And
can never do enough for you.
And
just
the nicest people on the planet.
They are great. Yeah. Yep.
And they won me over big time. Yeah.
Yep.
And so that was just the first day. It was before we couldn't even check in yet. Right.
Yeah.
So check in, but we're at the resort and we had like a 2.5-3 hour wait or something before the room was going to be ready.
Right.
So we decided to walk around the resort, get a bit of a feel for it, and then we're going to walk down the beach looking at the lagoon, and there's a little village next that sort of touches the resort. And we got to just off the edge of the resort, first building of the village, there's these kids playing. And they're the happiest, funniest, laughing kid. And there's another kid fishing in the water. And the mum comes down, introduces the kids to our kids, and their kids are off playing with our kids.
Yeah.
And then I'm taking photos of her kids. And then we become Facebook friends with the mum. Yeah, all this is for the first half hour. I'm in the water up to my thighs, photographing her young son out fishing on the reef. Her young daughter's got this little plastic cup and a tin can, and a drink can, a soda can, and she's pouring water between the two. So I'm photographing that, and it was just, I was like, oh, I was not expecting to get any good opportunities to shoot, really, you know,
yeah, right.
Being that we're mostly going to be sitting in a resort.
Yep.
And yeah, first day, I've already got a couple of images I really like. It's like,
awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Seriously impressed to the point that I'd happily go back there again.
Cool. You know? And did the wife and kids enjoy it?
They had a ball. They had a ball.
Awesome.
Yeah, the kids loved the fact that they could the pool had a swim up bar.
Yep.
So they could swim up, and it was everything inclusive. So they could order any drinks they wanted, and yeah, there was no nose.
Yeah.
So they had a ball. They were ordering mocktails at the bar and fancy glasses.
Nice.
So for young kids, to have that sort of freedom was pretty cool. Yeah, and sufficient variety in food. There's three different restaurants you could eat at, sort of thing. And,
yep.
And some of them are adults-only restaurants, so you had to be naked. No, so no kids allowed.
Yeah.
So you could, and that was like their classier restaurant. You could go there for like a proper date night kind of stuff. So we did a few of those. And I have to say, this is another amazing thing about the people. The first morning, so after the first day we checked, the first morning we're at our table, there was eight of us, and the waiter comes up and says, "Hi, I'm Jules," and lovely guy, and he goes, "What are your names?" And he went around the table after we said our names, and for the rest of the trip, we remembered everyone's name for 12 days.
Nice.
Yeah, one bang like that. He had us all pegged. And, every day he'd come to give the kids a hug and a kiss and couldn't do enough for them.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff was really good. But then on our last day, our last evening, we'd booked in with the other family, the other parents of that we'd spent most of the time with. We're going to have a foursome dinner at the fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there having dinner, and we'd been there before, but this time there was those little flower petals on the table, and no one else had it. That was kind of nice.
Yeah. You
know? And then after we had our main course, the waiter D comes up and said, "Look, we hear this is your last day. Not at any time. This is your last night with us. We just want to, hence the rose petals on the flower petals on the table. It's a sign of us wanting to say farewell to you and all that kind of stuff. And we'd like to sing you a song." Yeah,
yeah.
And we're going to also start to get uncomfortable. And then they had this little trio singing, this two guys and a girl, and this guy had the most amazing voice you've ever heard. And they came over, and all the waiters came over, and all the bar staff came over, and stood like a group of eight, and stood there and sang this 4.5-minute song to us.
Wow.
It wasn't like a 1 minute, you're going, it's nice to see you're going, and you're gone. It was 4.5 minutes of the most beautiful singing.
Nice.
And we'll see, we hadn't told them we're leaving. Pretty amazing. Yeah. The next day, my wife's going up to the pool to get some towels from the activities desk for the kids going to the pool.
Yep.
And she goes, and as she walks up, he goes, "Oh, you're leaving us today." Yeah, the pool towel guy knew we were leaving. It's just
wow.
Stuff that was really quite amazing.
Yeah. You know? What makes that even more amazing is to think that the guests don't arrive all in a batch and leave all in a batch.
No. They come and go at all times.
Yeah, it's like...
And there's 240-odd rooms.
Yeah. And to know, every family that's staying there and, when they're coming and when they're going is pretty incredible.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it, but gorgeous. Let's just see if this comes out. I'll say, something strange is happening here. I say, bear with me. I'm trying to play something.
Right.
So can you hear that?
Yep.
So you've got all these guys with different multi-level harmonies going.
Was this your farewell song?
This is the farewell 4.5-minute long song. Multiple harmonies, just astounding. But a couple of days earlier, about the third morning I was there, me and the father from the other family, the other main family, what happened is two family groups went together, and about 4 days in, another family group joined us.
Right.
So But me and the father and the other family got up at 5:30 one morning, went for a 15-minute walk down the road to shoot a sunrise over this pier that was down there.
Okay.
It's a beautiful pier. The very first morning I got up, we walked out into the lagoon. It was absolutely mirror finished. Everything was reflecting perfect. It wasn't a ripple on the water. It was gorgeous, but perfect blue sky. So, you know, there was no clouds or anything to reflect, but all the boats. So I thought if we walked out of the pier, and we get that kind of reflection, it's going to be pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And we get some colour in the sky and a bit of clouds, amazing sunrise. So we did this 15-minute walk down the road at 5:30 in the morning. Yeah. And once again, this shows how genuine the people are. All their saying hello to people isn't forced because you're in the resort. We're walking down this road at night in pitch black.
Yeah.
And from the other side of the road, from inside somebody's house that you couldn't see, this lady yells out, "Bula!" You know, and we're looking good with it. Yeah, so there's no need at all for this person to call out hello.
Yeah.
There's a couple of blokes walking down through at 5:30 in the morning. But that makes me feel it's very genuine, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So we walk all the way down to the pier, and as we're walking along, as we're reflecting on how lovely the stars are. They're so crisp and clear and how that means there's not a single cloud in the sky. And the further we go, the breeze starts to pick up.
Right.
It's a little bit windier. So there goes the reflections in the water. So we've got no reflections. We've got no clouds. And I get down there, and there's this guy fishing with a net. Not a net, the girl, a fishing net. Right. And he's fishing with his two sons.
Yep.
Nothing else to shoot. But this guy and his two sons are awesome. Yeah. So I'm photographing him. Turns out he's the local pastor from the church next to the village we're staying next to.
Right.
And I said, "Do you come here every morning, Sammy?" His name was Sammy. He goes, "No, only every 2 or 3 weeks." To the chair that morning when there was nothing else to shoot. It was just serendipity.
Yeah.
And so then he invited us to church on Sunday, of course. And so we all duly went. And again, whilst waiting for church start, we got there like half hour early before church started. There's all these kids just sitting in there. They all arrived early and they wear the nice clothes as they tend to do on these places on church. Church is very important. But there's like 15 kids. One kid will start singing. He'll just start a song and all the other 15 will join in with this most amazing, beautiful harmonies just because they want to, not because they've been told to. And they did this for half an hour, which is beautiful.
Yep.
And then halfway through the service, this choir got up and sang from kids to grown men. And oh, my Lord, they didn't sing "Oh, My Lord." They sang "Kumbaya," which normally would have me running for the exits.
Yeah.
But this thing was so beautiful and so incredible depths of harmony and levels of sound. It was astounding. So we waited for it to finish, then we left. So the people are just absolutely beautiful. And yeah, they always say people make a place. And no more so than that. So I would love – I don't really feel like I've seen the place very much.
Right.
Because, you know, you're most of the time in a resort. We did go out with one of the ladies from the village. She took us up to another village up in the hills where we had met the chief and saw how they lived and then went for a walk through the bush to learn how about the secrets of all the herbs and the plants and stuff.
Yeah.
And that ended up in a waterfall, about a 200-foot waterfall with a big plunge pool at the bottom.
Wow.
That the kids went snorkeling in, which was pretty darn cool. And it's full of huge fish, so they love that too. You know. And you could also go up to this waterfall by horseback, and some people got up by horseback, and the little local lads who had walked the horses up were climbing the waterfall and jumping off it. So, of course, another photo opportunity. So I'm there with my – this time I took the 17 to 35 up to like chest deep in water.
Yep.
And water splashing everywhere to shoot it. So I tested its waterproofness of the 17 to 35.
Nice.
So that was one other – and the last thing we did, I want to talk about this in a couple of minutes, is we went out with a marine biologist for a day.
Oh, wow.
He's rebuilding the coral reefs of Fiji, of the main island. And he's got this reef restoration project, and they've been going for like 18 years. And so they've got all these marine preserves in the area, and they're rebuilding the reef. And kids got to learn all about how they regrow coral, all this kind of stuff, how they replant them and all this. And then we snorkeled out through the marine reserve that took them, I don't know, half a kilometre out through the coral and back again.
Yeah.
And so four kids went out with the marine biologist and another diver, and they snorkeled out the whole way and learnt all this stuff. And we four adults went out with another another guy and saw roughly the same sort of stuff, and remarkable. Yeah, so it's a great cultural experience. Yep. For the kids, for the first, it was not too threatening to take someone who's, you know, taking young kids to India, not always easy.
Yeah.
In those sort of places, but somewhere like Fiji, it's enough same, it's enough different to feel like you've done something. So that was really cool.
Awesome.
And as I said, my preamble before leaving was I'm going to take just these two lenses, the new 17-35 and the new ultra slim 70-210, looking to try and find that perfect, you know, ultra small travel combo. What's the least you could take?
Yep.
And I've got to tell you, I'm off to New York in a couple of weeks' time, 5 or 6 weeks' time.
Yep.
I'm thinking of just taking those two lenses.
Yeah, right.
I'm running workshops over there. I think I'll just take those two. Rather than six lenses and stacks of stuff.
So the 17-35 is a 2.8 to f/4?
2.8 to 4, yeah. And the 70-210's f/4 through the range.
Yep. Nice.
And slim and small and, you know, compared to, I mean, the weight of the two lenses weighs less than my 70-200.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, straight away, your weight saving is fabulous. Yeah. The quality's fabulous.
Yep.
And you could buy a 70-210 and a 17-35 for less than the 70-200.
Yeah, exactly.
So your value-wise is smaller, it's lighter, so... I'm enamored. I'm in love with this little combo.
Awesome.
Because I didn't have to carry much stuff around. As I said to you, on Facebook, I didn't even take a battery charger with me.
Yeah.
I took one memory card only and four batteries.
Yeah, right.
And that was it. And I used 1.5 batteries because I said there wasn't an awful lot of time to shoot.
Yep.
But yeah, quite fabuloso. Got a few images, not you know, world's best imagery by any stretch. And I've just read an article today for Tamron USA that you're going on a family vacation and you're trying to squeeze in 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. What can you achieve? You
know? Yeah.
What are some of the tricks? And some of the tricks is looking at the staff. I photographed the staff of the resort for some portraits because, they were very willing and they were very there.
Yeah.
They were on hand all the time. Yeah.
Yep.
And coming from that, one of the guys I photographed, he does volunteer charity work, taking clothing up into the mountains of Fiji to the tribes, the villages that don't see tourists.
Yep.
And Fiji's got 330 islands, of which only about 30 or 40 or whatever are tourist destinations. The rest are traditional island living. And so he takes clothing out to the outer islands that no one goes to help clothe the people.
Yeah, right.
So now my two daughters have started a Scout and a Joey Scout project where they're going to, do a clothing drive and ship clothes to this guy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. It's going to cost me a fortune to post. But that's kind of cool. Yeah, you meet this guy in the resort who's selling snorkeling packages or whatever it was he was selling, diving packages.
Yeah.
And then you do a photo shoot and you get to know him, then you talk a bit about stuff and he tells you what he does and you build this relationship and it's one of the things I love about travel.
All
this was done. Just before coming online tonight, I was watching Facebook Live video of a lady from the village just out on the main road. Just she might be drunk. She's swinging her phone up and down the street, singing away. And it was beautiful. You build all these little funny little connections, you know.
Yeah.
This lady, I mean, these ladies, they did they do like hair braiding and all that sort of stuff. And so my kids hung out down their village quite a bit. On the last day, they said, come down and say goodbye before you leave. And so we did. And they gave my two girls these beautiful hand-carved traditional tribal masks as a gift to the kids.
Oh, nice.
Just they liked them, you know. It's just lovely. Just lovely.
Awesome.
So anyway, as the marine biologist, he was involved in a project for a documentary called Chasing Coral.
Right.
And on Netflix, and there's some stuff on YouTube you can watch. If you have Netflix, I highly recommend having a watch because, A, it's shocking, but it's also there's some great filming.
So what's
great
damaging their reefs? Is it tourism?
It's the same thing that's damaging reefs all around the world is water temperature.
Oh, okay.
So the water temperature in 2016 rose by 2 degrees.
Right.
Which in the world, if it's 2 degrees warmer here in Melbourne, it's not a major problem.
No.
But the Great Barrier Reef, the largest living organism on the planet,
yep,
had the same 2-degree temperature spike in 2016,
yep,
and lost 50% of its life. Wow. So half of the Great Barrier Reef is now dead.
Wow.
And these instances of this is called coral bleaching,
yep,
has been, they've been getting the first ones were ever recorded. So they've got reef history back for about 140 odd years. They've been monitoring reefs,
right?
Okay, so back in the 1870s,
yeah,
there's been not a single instance of water temperature bleaching from 1870 till I think it was early 1990.
Yeah, right.
So the first ever noticed in 1990. Now, remember, some of these corals are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
So my coral formations, my kids sat on one in the Fijian Reef that is known to be over 300 years old. So yeah, it's been alive for much longer than it's been recorded.
Yeah.
So this 2-degree temperature spike killed off half the living coral in the world.
Yeah.
And so the first one was seen about 1990. Then the next one was about 2002. Then the next one was like 2010. Then the next one was 2016. Yeah. Notice the pattern?
The intervals are getting shorter.
Yeah. So there's no time for anything to recover.
Yeah.
And what's chasing coral is, as they saw this water spike starting to come up again, and this film crew said, we're going to go to these different locations around the world and film the coral dying.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's no way can we explain to the people. They said, we show people a photo of coral, a coral reef that's been bleached,
yep,
and you see this beautiful white coral. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it's dead.
Yeah.
But so people don't see this horror. But if you sit there and you watch it go from this amazing, colourful thing surrounded by fish to just skeletons, maybe people notice.
Yeah.
So they've got this really cool camera technology. They basically built using Panasonic cameras,
right,
to do underwater time-lapse videos.
Oh, okay. Over months.
So that was some of the tech there was really quite amazing.
Wow.
And then some of the problems they came across trying to do this, and in the end it all kind of failed. And what they had to do was, I think for like 45 or 50 days, every day on the Great Barrier Reef, they had to swim to the same location, sit in the same spot,
yep,
and hand film,
right,
a whole bunch of such to try and do a hand time-lapse underwater with currents and everything else. And they managed to make it work, and you got this time-lapse footage of the coral dying.
Yeah, right. And
as my young daughter sat there watching, she had just tears rolling down the face.
Yeah. You know,
that they were showing this footage at this big symposium of the marine biologists, and they're all crying.
Yeah.
You know. So it's really quite devastating to watch this. And they said that a third of the planet's life is in these reefs.
Yeah.
And they said there won't be any left by the end of the century if we keep going the way we are. So that's pretty bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not defending it, but what happens is that the coral which is closest to the surface tends to die first because that's where the water gets warmer. And so what happens is that the stuff that's at the surface becomes the stuff that's actually a little deeper in the water. But it does mean that the coral will end up being deeper than, you know, what we're used to seeing. Instead of it being close to the surface where you can snorkel around it, it'll end up being, 10 meters down and you'll need scuba.
Yeah, but the problem is all the life
yep,
on the coral lives at that temperature of water and that
pressure. Oh, I get it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so the problem is all the fish life will also die because they don't.
No, the fish will just swim deeper.
10 meters. No, they won't, because they're
well, some will, some won't. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, but some will be able to survive the extra pressure.
Yeah.
Most of them won't.
Yep.
Most of them require the light.
Yes.
10 minutes, and the problem is 10 minutes deeper.
It's much darker, yes.
10 minutes deeper, all the stuff that these small fish live off doesn't live.
Yep.
So, yeah, there might be some coral down deeper, but everything that lives on is dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a amazing thing to watch. So my kids are doing a fundraising for coral as well now.
Oh, good on them.
The Great Barrier Reef. They're doing some stuff there. And but if you are out there as a teacher of some form or have a public forum, if you go to chasingcoral.com, they have all these education resources that if you want to teach people and show people and get people involved, and there's all these projects you can do. And it's a pretty comprehensively put together thing. And the guy who started is obviously made his money as an advertising executive.
Oh, okay.
and then one day he was sitting in his office going, we're having this heated debate about trying to convince people to use 4-ply toilet paper instead of 3-ply toilet paper. And he realized there's got to be something more to life than this. You know? Yeah. So he looked at the problem of what's happening in the oceans as an advertising problem.
Yeah.
Because it's all out of mind, out of sight, because it's underwater.
That's it.
So he's trying to put this out, all this knowledge out there as advertising for the ocean, basically.
Yep.
So it's pretty cool. And I would highly, yeah. And even if you just want to see the cool tech that they developed and what went wrong, which is pretty interesting, it's definitely worth the hour and 20 or whatever it goes for. And
yeah, nice.
Yeah. So anyway, I've awesome. Waffled on and pontificated for long enough.
No, it's good that you enjoyed your time over there.
I did indeed.
We were there in 2003 and just absolutely loved it. And I think Max was only 2 years old at the time, and exactly like your girls, you know, they meet up with a kid of their own age, and you know, language is no impediment, and they just play, and you know, it's great.
It's very cool. It's nice to be able to introduce your kids to travel, you know. It's important to
definitely
have a broader viewpoint of the world. Yeah,
definitely,
especially from their privileged little white lives that they have.
Yes.
Now, speaking of advertising,
yeah,
Canon today, recently, when we recorded this, not when you're listening to it,
yeah,
announced their new mirrorless cameras today. The EOS R.
Right.
It's obviously from the pirate family.
Yep.
Looks kind of interesting. They've got four lenses coming out with it, three different adapters to go from EOS lenses to the R series adapters. And here's the thing I love. Canon promises that the EF RF adapters will allow the millions of existing EF lenses in circulation to be used without compromise on the new EOS R and future RF mounted cameras. Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? Until I looked at the specs. And when you put the lens on the R camera, it automatically converts to APS-C sensor.
Ah.
It doesn't sound like without compromise to me. Sounds like a compromise.
Yes.
Somewhat a compromise. But I've got to say, just speaking of advertising a minute ago, they've nailed just one perfect anti-Sony, anti-Fuji, all this other discussions. They nailed with one line the conundrum so many photographers have.
Okay.
And this is the line. You don't switch to it, you add it to the family.
Right.
So, oh, I'm changing systems, I'm switching up. No, you don't have to change systems. You don't have to reinvest. Just add this one to your family of other cameras. I thought it was just perfect. It's just all those people who are humming and ahhing, oh, do I have to change? I don't want to change. Oh, no longer have to because, hey, just add it to the family, guys. I loved it. It was, to me, the perfect line.
Right.
Don't you agree? I mean, all you see all these web things, all these people asking questions about changing to Sony. And, yeah. But I've got all this Nikon glass, I've got all this Canon. Oh, I love my Canon. Don't have to anymore, guys. You can just add. And Nikon, of course, brought out their Z, announced their Z 2 weeks. So, yeah, just add that one to the family as well.
Yeah, but
you don't have
but
to.
But the thing is, right, the people who are, you know, bleating and moaning about whether or not to change families or, you know, whatever, are generally going to try and sell their existing body to at least cover part of the purchase price of the new body.
Yeah. No, they don't have to.
So, yeah, but some people need to in order to purchase the new body.
They'll get diddly for what they're selling.
Oh, I realize that.
So, as soon as they realize that, they won't do it. And look, how many cameras do you have laying around that you don't use?
Me? Two.
Only two, yeah. I've probably got about half a dozen, eight, ten. I reckon you find most people, same. They don't sell off their gear. They don't trade it. They hang on to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a 15-year-old digital camera and I've got a, you know, 25-year-old film camera.
Film camera, yeah. God, it'd be nice to put those film camera lenses on, wouldn't it? Oh, you can with an adapter. Yeah. No compromises.
No.
I'm still shooting with all of the lenses that I used to use on that film camera.
Oh, so you've got that Sony Minolta camera, haven't you?
That's it.
Minolta camera. But no, not if you actually get a modern camera, though, dude.
No, that's right. That is exactly my conundrum right now, is that if and when I do decide to upgrade, which will probably be in the next couple of years, I am looking at one of two scenarios. Like, even if I was to cave in and say, yes, I'll buy an A99 Mark II, which is already a two-year-old camera, it has a different hot shoe than my existing cameras. So I couldn't use all of my El Cheapo Yongnuo flashes. I'd have to buy other El Cheapo Yongnuo flashes with the right hot shoe to suit that camera. But at least that camera body would be A-mount, so I could keep my existing crop of lenses. And if I choose to go to a mirrorless system, then I've pretty much got to throw everything in the bin and start from scratch. So,
it's no fun, is it?
So I'm basically, I think I'm just going to shoot with my A850 until the shutter carks it. And then I'll worry about it.
Or just win a stack of money from somewhere and just buy whatever.
Yeah, well,
that'd be
great, you know.
Just do that instead.
Yes.
just go and do it. I'm not sure why you haven't already.
Yes, me either.
So a couple of days ago, Tamron announced the new 15-30 as well, the new G2 version of my favourite lens, my 15-30.
Okay.
So they're upgrading that.
And what is meant by G2? Is that
that's
F2?
A series of lenses. So what it does, it basically brings into a lot the old lens into the same build style, the same as their 24-70, the 150-600, all their other lenses basically.
Right.
So all their pro lenses are now on the same build platform.
Oh, and this
basically.
One is 2.8 across the range.
It is, yeah. So it's the pro version of the. I mean, frankly, I think it's stupid they brought out a 17-35. 10 weeks ago or whatever, and now 15-30, because let's muddy the waters for everybody.
Yeah.
But, there's a significant price difference between the two. It's like $1,000 US price difference between the two. But
wow.
Either way,
wow.
Don't muddy the waters. Just don't. Yeah, it's just stupid. But I can't help myself.
So what is their reasoning there then?
I don't know. It's a Japanese company. You don't ask for reasoning.
Okay, right. Sorry.
No
silly
me. Reasoning. I mean, why did they change the hot shoe in the Sony A99 too?
No
idea.
Because
they could.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just they've got no idea about the real world. And so I couldn't help myself. I had to pop in a DP review.
Yeah.
Or D-preview, depending how you prefer to say it.
Yeah.
And just see what people were saying about it.
Oh, okay.
And then I wished I hadn't.
I'll bet you did. What did they say?
I tried to blank out most of them, but I couldn't resist this one. Someone was saying that the MTF charts for the old...
Oh, come on, do the voice.
I'll get there in a minute. The old 15-30 is the same as the MTF charts for the new 15-30, to which this man replied, here comes the voice, MTF charts are only valid for images not using distortion correction, and distortion of lenses are never reflected in MTF charts. So, if a newer lens has less distortion, an older lens both could have identical MTFs. But by the time one shoots pure raw images with lens distortion correction applied, it will alter the older lens more than the newer lens with respect to IQ for actual, in practice, MTF chart drastically. I don't know what that means. In fact, if the newer lens has superior optics with less distortion, one could forgo with any lens distortion correction altogether. Thus, its MTF results remain unaffected. Using an older lens with inferior optics with more distortion, use of lens distortion correction to keep up with the newer lens having less or no distortion renders its MTF chart affected negatively. Worse, when noise is present and any NR applied to shifted noise from original position.
What the hell?
And, you know, you just have to back away.
I think you do.
You just have to quietly close the window down and just say.
and just concede that that guy's not out shooting and he's not going to run into you anytime soon.
Oh, my good Lord. There's a couple of things I will say about the new Canon EOS R.
Yeah.
Their sample images look beautiful.
Right.
So obviously DP Review didn't shoot them.
I was going to say.
I think they're supplied by Canon. But one thing they've got a new 28-70 lens coming out for it, and it's f2 through the range.
So that F2?
So that seems quite nice, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's 28-70 rather than 24, but yeah, it sounds kind of a nice lens.
Yeah.
And they've got a 35mm 1.8 macro coming out, and it's not a super close macro, but it sounds like a good sort of ideal small lens to keep on the camera all the time,
right,
with the ability to do some good close focus stuff. Yep. So they've got some nice lenses coming out with it.
Okay.
Mind you, I might say when that 28-70 is on the camera doesn't look very small anymore. Well, right. The camera looks small, but the kit doesn't look very small.
Right.
But yeah, that's it. And one other thing I saw today, which I really loved. Whilst a couple of weeks ago, DJI announced the new Mavic with the Hasselblad zoom lens.
Oh, okay. Yep.
I think we talked about that, but they've put this little video up on YouTube. It's a 10-second video, so have a look at the link. But they use a new feature is called Dolly Zoom, and it's taken the old Alfred Hitchcock technique of moving the camera backwards while zooming at the same pace.
Oh, okay, yeah. Pull zoom.
Pull focus.
Yeah.
But done automatically by the drone.
Oh, so nice.
And it does it automatically, which just saves a lot of the time trying to work it out technically yourself. But it looks pretty darn good. So click on that little link there and have a little gander at it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, it's a good job, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's very good.
To say that it's fully automatic and you can just press the button, I'd imagine what you'd have to do is press on the object, the touch screen on the object of what you want to keep as the centered focus point.
Yeah,
and it would then automatically work on that. But it looks pretty darn cool.
Yeah,
and a very neat little feature to have, and add a bit of spice to people's videos.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of nice. And the last thing I've got to natter about is I saw this thing about camera shipments again.
Okay.
Just look at the health of our industry, and camera shipments compared to last year, shipments of all digital cameras,
across all manufacturers.
23%. Yep.
Yep.
Down 23%.
Ouch.
All digital cameras down 23% across the board, dropping from 1,900,000 for the month of July, this is.
Right.
Down from 1,942,000 to 1,496,000. That's half a million cameras less, basically, which is pretty drastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interchangeable lens, though, slightly less. It's only down 16%, but still fairly significant. Yeah. So anyway, that's my stuff to rabbit on for the week.
Right.
I'm done. I don't want to say any more except the stuff I'm going to say.
Did you catch up on Facebook with your Vant Zanzanian's outburst?
I did see the odd comment or two from you, Vant. slightly aggrieved. The AIPP, Australian Institute of Professional Photographers, awards from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I read some of the 300 or 400 disparaging comments that followed his post.
Yeah. I didn't even get through it all. I, read probably 40 or 50 of the comments and just went, this is just too much for me to absorb.
Yeah, I mean, your Vant is one of the world's best photographers, wedding photographers, without that, any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
Fabulous. But he decided to, on his own personal Facebook page, so he's welcome to do it, to attack an organization he's done volunteer stuff for many, many years and been supportive of for many, many years, and not necessarily been overly clear with what his issues were.
Right.
Not necessarily clear with all the truths. They might have all been exactly true, some of the things he was saying.
Right.
And he may have not done good things when he was at the awards. He didn't show up for some stuff he was supposed to show up for. He showed up late for other stuff.
Like the judge's briefing.
Yeah, the judge's briefing to say how the judging's going to go. And then because he didn't show up for that, when he finally showed up 2 hours late for the judging, his comments didn't go down well because what he was saying wasn't in line with how they wanted the format to be done.
Yeah.
So your Van Zanzanian, if you want to have a couple of hours with several cups of coffee, check out his Facebook page and have a read through. It's once again, and this has been an ongoing issue with our AIPP organization for 18 months or so. There'd been all this infighting, all these problems, all the board got sacked, and one of the issues were that caused all the board to fall over in the first place, and where your Vance coming from is that two people were basically squeezed out of the board, and that made the whole thing fall over.
Right.
And then when the new board got back together, they invited these same two people that were squeezed out before back on, without people voting for them to be there.
Right.
Then elected a president from none of the people from the board, but got somebody else in from the outside, our good friend John Swainston.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that John Swainston?
Yeah, but the board said, come and do it, John.
Right.
Not members.
Right. Is there something in their charter that says that the members should vote who the president is?
Who knows? And because I know they're rewriting the charter, or have been since, according to your Vance, since 2013. So it's quite a bit of a lengthy process. I think he said they started. I think one of his comments was they started writing it when the gun laws were written in the U.S. Constitution. I think that might be a slight exaggeration.
Right.
Yes, but it does seem. I've got to say, I admire and respect John completely.
Totally. I'm sure
there's nothing untoward there. But it does seem strange that you have a board and you don't elect one of your board members to be the chair of the board.
Right.
You go and get an outside. But to me, that doesn't make any sense. What's the point of having a... Yeah,
well,
you've got this group of people who are volunteering to run the organisation.
Yeah.
Get one of them to be the leader.
Yeah.
Just that's who were voted in. Yeah. They're the people who put the name on for the board.
Yep.
So everyone knows, okay, this is their board, and all of a sudden there's three people on the board that they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that just sounds a bit weird, and I'm sure it's all fine and dandy, but I don't think you can see why people would think that's odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All over my head.
All the fun and games. All the fun and
all fun and games until someone loses a board seat.
Yes, right. That's what.
Dear, oh dear. Well, we will very, very quickly run through a few stories that have been submitted, mostly by Adam. But Steve Peters did send us a Facebook link, which I have not had a chance to have a look at, and I can't copy and paste that link. So I'm just going to...
Yeah, every time I click on B, you've written Facebook video link, nothing happens.
Funny that. So what I would say is if you want to follow that link, please go to the Shudders Inc. page, click on notifications. Ooh. I hope regular visitors to the page can actually see the notifications. And look for Steve Peters' link there. There's a link to a video.
How long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing the podcast for 13 years, but I haven't been running a page on Facebook for 13 years. So.
Oh, a page. Oh, okay.
Adam sent us a bunch of stories. The first one has the title, "She posed for a free photo shoot. Now her face is showing up everywhere." And this story goes that this girl was asked to pose for a straight-on head portrait for free, which she did, and then gets, months and months later, an email from a friend of hers on the other side of the planet going, "Isn't this you?" Turns out her face is being used in a stock library and has been used multiple times around the world. And, of course, she, didn't get paid for it, but presumably she must have signed a model release. Otherwise,
bad luck.
Otherwise, the photographer would not have been able to sell it on a stock library. So, yeah.
If she signed a form and saying, "Hey, you've got rights to use the image however you want," bad luck.
Yeah,
I'm sure that if part of the deal was that she got images that the same images and she could do whatever she wanted with them, well, not the photographer's fault that she couldn't get them to be successful.
Yeah, well, basically the story says she's warning people be very careful to read the fine print when signing a model release. So, yeah,
I would say to any photographer out there and or any model out there, who's doing this sort of TFP stuff,
yep,
they should have included in the contract that should this image be picked up for any financial gain down the track,
yep,
that there should be a profit share.
Yep, absolutely. And I've always done that with my models. I've always said if I ever, you know, make a dollar, then, you know, I'll come back and let you know.
Get it in the hey, I mean, if you're doing TFP work for a, and for those who don't know what TFP stands for, it's time for photos, time for prints, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
If you're a model and you're showing up and the photographer doesn't have a contract, you should have your own. You should get the photographer to sign your contract.
Yep.
And your contract will state,
yep,
that you're doing this work, your expectation is to receive X amount of images from the photographer, blah, 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 and should any financial reward for these images come down the track, that might, you might enter a photo competition and win $50,000.
Yep.
Or you might be in the stock library and make $8, who knows? But there should be some an agreed upon, and you can leave that bits blank, X percent to X percent, 80-40, it's not bad, is it? 80-20, 60-40, whatever the split's going to be, and you get both to sign off on it.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. So if you're showing up as a model without a release and the photographer doesn't have any you know, forms, you should have your own. If you're a photographer, you should be, if you have any intention of doing anything other than taking photos to learn, then you should be honouring that that as well, and have a contract that you're going to, you know,
yeah,
reward. As you say, you've got a verbal contract that you will reward them.
Yep.
But they don't know that. I mean, that yeah, you might say it to them, but there's no guarantee. But if they've been writing,
yep.
Imagine it's so unlikely. But imagine you took a photograph that was actually good, and someone offered you $1 million for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, stuff the model.
No, I would honour it.
You wouldn't, but I mean, a lot of people would. But if it's in the contract, bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, some opportunity there. Yeah.
Yep. Next story is, this guy flipped an element in an old lens and got magic bokeh.
He does have magic bokehs. This is just beautiful.
Aren't they great? So this guy's an Iranian photographer, and he was looking at Zeiss lenses, but they were too expensive to tamper with. And he has had a bit of a history of mucking around with the optics in cameras and their lenses. And so he started looking at the cheaper Russian stuff like the Helios and the Zenit brands, and picked up this Zenit MC Zenitar 50mm f2 lens for about $70. And just opened it up, changed one of the elements of glass inside the lens, like just inverted it basically, and then ends up with this amazing bokeh.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to know how many crappy shots he gets before he gets these good ones, but, yeah.
Well,
but
surely the effect of the bokeh would all be determined by the aperture you shoot at, surely.
And the background.
Oh, okay, so as in, yes, subject to camera distance. Yeah,
and just the tonal variations of stuff, and the size of stuff in the background. You don't get swirls of vortex bokeh if you've got blue sky in the background.
No.
You get nothing.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of planning background behind your images to give the effect at its best.
Yeah.
And he's done a fabulous job. So I love it. I think the look is just beautiful.
Yeah.
I would buy that lens off him. I would buy it. Seriously, if he was making those lenses,
yeah,
I'd love to play with one. I think the result is fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd get a bit same.
Yep. Yes, yeah, you wouldn't use it all of the time.
But for the certain projects, it would be just fabulous, yeah?
Yeah. That's the kind of lens that if you were doing weddings, you know, two or three images out of your shoot with that lens could just give the wedding album something unique. But anyway, absolutely. There's a little video in there for anyone that wants to go and check it out, as well as a whole bunch of images that he's shot. So, yeah, definitely.
Is there a video showing you how to do it?
I haven't had a chance to watch the video myself. So
if there is, and there's someone out there wants to do... get one of those lenses and convert them for me, I'll give you $50. Australian. $50 Fijian dollars.
It looks like there's a bunch of stills there, but I don't know whether the text actually goes into the description of which element to change or not, but pretty awesome. Next one is Chroma Chrono is the world's first programmable multi-color camera flash. So there you go, a flash that can throw out different light
simply by, you know, dialing in your settings on the back of the flash. And
so it's really hard to put a bit of gel on the front.
Well, I guess if you're the kind of person that either loses the gel or loses the little bits of tape that hold the gel on, or
you lose this flash because the flash is
small. That too. I guess it was only a matter of time.
So it looks like it's an LED light.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not going to have much power.
No, it's certainly not going to be your 60 guide number flash.
And they're £120, which is, you know, 250 odd Australian dollars, which is in fact, they're going to be 140 when they. You know, that's a lot of money. You could buy, you know, three other flash guns and a whole set of gels and have three powerful flashes to do what that's doing. Yeah.
So, you could buy a set of gels for each of those flashes.
Yeah, I love the idea, but.
Totally. Next one was on DIYphotography.net, and this is, flying with gear, you may soon be able to keep it in the carry-on luggage thanks to new scanners. I have not had a chance to read this, but...
what's going to happen, Bruce, is if you're flying with gear in the future,
yeah,
you may soon be able to keep your gear in the bag.
Fantastic.
Because they've got some new scanners.
Fantastic. Thanks for clearing that up.
My pleasure.
If you want even more in-depth analysis of this story beyond what myself and Glenn have shared, then check out the link.
I've read some of the article now. Allow me to know.
Okay.
Here we go. When you're flying with photo gear, it's a pretty slow process to have all your cameras, lenses, and other stuff scanned separately, because that never happens. I don't know what they're talking about. But here is some good news. The TSA is currently testing new scanners that allow all your electronic gear to stay in your carry-on luggage and go through the airport without so much fuss. There you are. Let's clean it up.
Fantastic.
Now, when have you ever had to pull all your lenses out, all your cameras out, and have them scanned individually?
Never.
Ever?
No.
Ever?
No.
I have, in some third world countries, had to take all them out and put them all loose in it. So, you know, you put all your lenses in one tray in your camera, and it all has to go. All has to come out of the bag.
Yep.
But that's not each one individually. That's a whole tray at a time.
Yeah.
It's still a pain in the bum when you've got, you know, 14 people to all have to do it with a tour group. But, it's.
The thing is, what that doesn't address is the fact that the airlines are so stingy with how much weight you can take into your cabin anyway.
Well, it's not so much. It's not actually, but, you know, the reason why.
Well, because they need to limit how much stuff people carry into the...
No?
Okay.
It's nothing to do with weight.
That's true, because it can go under the plane.
The person next to me weighs 40 kilos.
Yeah,
we've got both the same allowance. It's because anything over 7 kilos, if it falls out of the above thing, can kill you.
Oh, really?
So it's a matter of if there's an incident and stuff falls out, the heavy stuff is more likely to kill people than the light stuff.
Right.
That's all. Only reason. It's got nothing to do with how much weight's in the plane or where it is. It's to do with it falling. It's the same reason why you have to have your window, your little blind things in your windows up when you land.
Well, that's an anti-terrorism measure.
No, it's not anti-terrorism.
Yeah, it is.
If you, when you crash, there's already light coming through the windows, so you can see. But the reason why they turn the cabin lights off when you're landing at night.
Yeah.
So your eyes are adjusted to darkness in case you crash and need to get out.
Right.
So it's all to do with crashing.
Okay.
A lot of these rules on board are all about worst case scenario. If something goes pear-shaped, what?
The story that I had heard about the window shades is that back in the 80s when terrorists used to hijack aeroplanes, they would make you shut all of those window shades so that the, you know, police and SWAT teams and whatever that were on the ground would not be able to see into the plane to see how many perps were, you know, hijacking the plane and where they were on the plane at any given moment in time. And that's why they changed that.
Horse hockey.
Okay.
Horse hockey. Because if you're flying in and you're still at 20,000 feet, there's no one looking at the window counting how many people are in there.
No.
Which is when they want things to go up.
No, but they want the windows to be open when they touch onto the ground so that, you know,
Honestly, this is from an insider, but I'm talking to people who've been in the airline industry for many, many years.
Fair enough.
It's a vision thing.
Right.
If you crash, and that's why the light, once again, why the lights go off at night, is your eyes are adjusted to the dim conditions.
Right.
If you plane crash during the middle of the day and everyone's and there's no lights in the plane anymore, and everyone's windows were down, it would be quite dark.
Yes.
If it crashes and there's no lights and everyone's windows open, people have a chance of seeing the way out.
Right.
That's all it is.
Okay. So, fair enough.
Cool. Hey? The things you learn.
Yeah.
We should call this a shutters and crashing planes investigations
podcast.
Podcasting. There we go.
And the last thing that Adam sent us was the Sony Tough Cards.
Do we care about that?
I don't know.
That's not the talk about it.
No. Okay. I'll put the link in the show notes. Sorry, Adam. Yeah. Glenn voted it off the island.
We're making up for your 11 minutes last week. I'm telling him this week.
There we go.
You know what we could do is we could split this into two episodes of where we're going.
We probably could, but we won't. I do want to mention, Rob Coates, thank you very much for the NAR box. It's sitting on my desk. It is still unopened. It's been sitting there for 3 weeks, but I'll assume that what's inside the package is a NAR box.
You assume many things, young man.
So we will work out a way to give this away to another valid listener, to one of the other six. And I'm coming to Melbourne this weekend.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Good question. Myself and Kath and another couple heading down there on Friday. That'll be 2 days before this podcast comes out. And we're going to hire a car on Saturday, and we're going to go and visit all the wineries in the Yarra Valley.
Come
home Sunday. So yeah, just a quick trip, just a getaway for the weekend.
Yeah. Nice.
Yes.
Why not?
Yes. All right, mate. Well, good to have you back.
Are you going
to
take some photos?
Look, I'll be taking my camera, but we are not paying for checked luggage, so it's going to be hand luggage only. So I'm probably just going to take a standard backpack, not even a camera bag, and throw probably just take my 24-70 and maybe my 20mm wide, and just take a GorillaPod or my knockoff GorillaPod, and that's pretty much it. I don't even think.
Are you staying out in the valley?
No, we're staying in the centre of the city.
Well, that's pretty stupid.
Because
how far away it is.
Yes,
that's for the city. The valley, don't you?
Yeah, but it's because we own timeshare, and so we've got this hotel in the city that we get cheap accommodation at as part of the timeshare. So,
do you know what's not cheap?
What's not cheap?
Time and petrol.
Right.
So it's a 2 hour drive each way.
Yep.
There's 4 hours driving on one day.
But that's part of the adventure.
There's suburbia, dude. I have nothing to see. And do you know what you're missing?
What?
Balloons taking off in the Yarra Valley as the sun rises with all the mist early in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, when you get 10, 15 balloons taking off as the sun comes up, lighting the mist. Fabulous photo opportunity. But where will you be? Stinky Melbourne City.
In bed.
No, I hope you have a great time, dude.
Thank you, mate.
Sounds like it. Are you doing a wine tour or are you driving?
No, we're just doing it ourselves. I've gone through all of the recommendations that were handed to me on Facebook from my post, and mapped out half a dozen wineries that we want to go to, along with the Yarra Valley Dairy, I think it's called, and Chocolate Place. And so we're going to do that, and on both of the Friday night and the Saturday night, the girls want to go and check out the alleys in the centre of the city and find a little restaurant in the laneways. And
what kind of restaurant are you looking for?
We're open to suggestions.
If you like a good steak, check out Rare.
That's the name of the restaurant.
Yeah, Rare, best steaks in Melbourne.
Right,
in downtown Melbourne. If you want to see some live music late at night, check out Bird's Basement Jazz Club.
Oh, okay.
A cool little night out. So
nice.
So have a fine time in our lovely city. We expect to see fabulous photos.
You can expect all you like.
Postcards, obviously.
All right, mate.
Awesome.
We'll talk to you next week. Yep, we'll do.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.